You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 26th of April 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we are broadcasting live tonight here at RadioAryan.com because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Yes.
Doing good?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Just off the back of a 2.5 hour interview with Bill Fink during the week, which was good.
Excellent. So I believe he's going to be publishing that tomorrow at christaginia.org. So listeners can check that out. Have you been working on the final part of the documentary series?
I've been not physically working as such, but gathering all the information, including your little section, which you kindly did for me.
Oh, that bit that I recorded for you. I'd forgotten about that. Am I playing a bad guy in it, aren't I? Am I one of the baddies?
Yes, you are, actually,
Why am I always cast as one of the baddies? I'm always cast as one of the baddies when I do a voiceover for anyone. I'm not sure what I should take away from that.
Yeah.
Well, we've got we got comments and questions tonight again, and this time we've taken them from your other channel, which maybe not all the listeners are aware of. Wisest of the Wise. That's the other YouTube channel that you want to check out, because I don't believe that any of your content can actually be accessed on the other one. I may be wrong.
No, we're selling a lot from the UK anyway.
Well, that's another thing we should let listeners know about as well. I mean, if you get yourself a VPN, then you can still view this content. And I would suggest NordVPN. They're a really good company. And I think it works out at about £3 a month. You have to sign up for 3 years, and it's a great little app, and you can.
It's cheap, is that, isn't it?
Yeah. And you can be on a server in Britain or in Bulgaria or Russia or America or China, anywhere in the world. Which means that you are protected from people that are spying on you. And it also means you can get past the censor and you can see what the rest of the world is able to see. It's a great bit of kit. It's
totally legal. Why the censoring?
Yeah, it's totally legal. I think they're a really good company. NordVPN, anyone who's looking for a virtual proxy. Right. Well, let's get into some of these questions and comments that we've got. And the first lot of questions, it all actually comes from one commenter. Gentile Uprising, he calls himself. And the first question he's got is about the Ku Klux Klan. He says, would you agree Adolf Hitler was not an ally of the Ku Klux Klan? I found some interesting research about Hitler closing down KKK organizations in Germany. But to this day, the KKK, Rockwell and white supremacy is always linked together with National Socialism. So what do you think of that, Dennis? Because Adolf Hitler, I don't think he was an ally of the KKK, because there was that propaganda poster, which was anti-America, anti the liberators, and the liberator monster that had rockets for feet and it had a Ku Klux Klan hood on it, which, you know, it's quite obvious that Adolf Hitler was anti the KKK. So why do you think that was?
Well, the denazification, as long as it was, I think 5 years, nobody in, nobody out of Germany, they couldn't possibly cover everything. I'm not saying they didn't do a good job, but there's always going to be some posters, you know, they've forgotten about or hadn't managed to reach. And with the KKK, if you remember in Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. I did an interview after that, I remember online, where I was asked 12 questions, 10 questions, on the actual documentary. And one of the questions was about that. And I said at the time that he would never have been a member of the KKK for a number of reasons. One, he was Catholic, and Catholics weren't actually endeared by the KKK. Another one, it was Masonic beginnings with a war criminal, Albert Pike, whose statue's never been asked to be taken down, and he's the only Southern general which stands in the Union side of in Washington. So, and there's a couple of things. Like I said, I don't believe he actually burnt Jews or Negroes or hung them from trees, which, because that's what the Klan did. So, I just felt that it was an organization that he was particularly wanted to join, although Truman did.
Well, I think it's the anti-Catholic side of it that was probably the most important. The second version of the Klan, their main enemy was Catholics. The second enemy was Jews, and then blacks. But the main enemy was Catholics. And then you think, well, who else had a main enemy in Catholics? Freemasons. And then you look exactly. at the offices in the Ku Klux Klan, and they've got things like Grand Wizard, which is obviously taken from the secret societies. It's taken from Freemasonry. Now, that's not to say that there weren't a lot of good people involved in the Klan, because I'm certain there were a lot of very, very good, honourable, upright
people. There always is, though, yeah.
But it shows you...
But it's the essence, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is what I mean. I think it shows you how deeply Freemasonry had embedded itself in America.
That shows. That was a great shock to me. Definitely.
Because when they're trying to form an organization, they just can't help but have it like Freemasonry, because that's the organization that they think of when they're trying to form something. That's what it says to me. And also, they were very supportive of the Democrats, and obviously Hitler was against democracy, and I think that may have played into it as well. But there really isn't written about it. I mean, we're sort of basing this on this poster, which was very anti the Ku Klux Klan. But today, I mean, they just get said in the same sentence, don't they? Neo-Nazis, Ku Klux Klan, white supremacists.
Yeah.
As if it's all the same thing.
It was all from the same page, yeah. But the thing is, the thing what fools everybody is the anti-Semitism against the Jews, where I truly believe it was a Jewish organization from the beginning.
Yeah, I don't think they were anti-Jew, were they, really? That wasn't very important to them.
Exactly.
Anti-Catholic.
Well, it was something to throw people off the scent, I think.
Now, I think you make a good point there about, about the lynching of the blacks, because that does really go counter to the narrative that Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews, because the Ku Klux Klan, whether rightly or wrongly, they had a reputation for lynching people, lynching blacks.
Burning them to trees, which is, if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. But you can't just say, Hitler would love to join, because I don't agree.
I mean, we know now that, they had good reason for that. They you couldn't take them to a courthouse if they'd committed a crime, because it was far too far to go, and they didn't have courthouses, and they needed immediate justice to prevent the other blacks from thinking, we can get away with this, and rising up, because they're outnumbered by them.
Yeah.
So there was a reason for it. But yeah, I think that explains why he was against them, and I think they just like to tar white people today with anything that's negative. So they just say Ku Klux Klan, Nazis, and anything else they can think of that turns people off.
Well, the other thing I've got to say as well is that the fact that they wore masks, that actual fact that they actually wore the masks meant they were hiding the faces. You didn't know who they were. It's a secret society. Which, again, it does not appeal to Hitler.
Yeah, that as well. I mean, he was anti the secret societies, wasn't he? I mean, it didn't really matter what they were. He wanted to take them down. Freemasonry, occult societies, any secret societies. I mean, what are they doing holding secrets from everybody else?
Exactly.
Obviously against everyone else, aren't they? I think back in the early Athens, and you couldn't actually have meetings in your home. You had to, if you had something to say, you had to say it in the public square so that everybody could hear, because otherwise it was assumed that you would be plotting against everybody else.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes sense. Awesome. Makes sense. If you've got an open government at the time, then it makes sense. If you've got a government to build up your people.
When the government is involved in that secret society, that's even worse.
Yeah. As they are today. Well,
as they are today.
His next comment, this is another good one. He says, also, I've always wanted to ask you, what is your opinion on the transfer agreement? I know you covered it briefly in TGSNT, and I've since then done a lot of digging on the subject on my own because the topic was driving me crazy. But I'm curious to know what you think the transfer agreement was really about. Do you believe Hitler was a Zionist agent from the start? I personally don't believe any of those Hitler was a Rothschild conspiracy theories, but the transfer agreement is one of those topics the anti-Zionists will always bring up in order to discredit anything good that Hitler ever did. They will say it doesn't matter if the Holocaust was a hoax because Hitler helped create the State of Israel. Doesn't matter if he banned Freemasonry all over Europe because he was being financed. It gets annoying. So what do you think about the transfer agreement, first off, Dennis? And does that mean Hitler was a Zionist agent?
Sorry?
No. Does that mean he was a Zionist, not even a small one at the start?
No. No, okay. No. And the proof is in what I'm going to say. The fact that, again, I'll go back to the Untermeyer speech where he claims that the Germans are treating the Jews inhumanly, they're being tortured, they're being left destitute, which was all, obviously, propaganda at the time. He was jailing communists, and communists were certainly Jews, and he even had people come into the camps to check, and, you know, people from America even went over and said, yeah, everything's fine. Okay, so let's just clear that bit up. But Untermeyer is stoking the fire with this speech, which is one of the most underrated speeches of World War II, even though it was in 1933. So, we're told all this about the Jews, and it's ingrained in us. I mean, I got all this at school, and I'm sure everybody else got it at school, how bad they were with the Jews. Then suddenly, 1986, a book comes out by a Jew whose parents then disown him, Edwin Black. Now, he brings out this book and describes what happened with the transfer agreement. And at that time, obviously, Untermeyer has now got this world boycott against Germany. Now, the last time this happened, they put a boycott on Germany just after World War I to force them to sign the Treaty of Versailles. 900,000 starved because of this blockade, military blockade. Well, they're going to try and do the same again because Germany obviously, relies on export and import. So if you can block that, people are going to starve. And Untermeyer knew this. And Hitler knew this. So he, on one hand, he wants to get rid of the Jews. He thinks, they're not good for his nation. But on the other hand, nobody wants them. Not America, not England, nobody. The only people that wanted them were the Zionists because they wanted the Jews to go down into Palestine. So if he's going to remove this, what he calls, alien society from Germany peaceably, this is a perfect opportunity. It's nothing to do with creating Israel. He made speeches saying that if it ever became a Jewish state, it would be the home for gangsters to go run and hide. The point being is that it was getting rid of these Jews. It was also negotiating to get this blockade taken off, which it was, while these Jews were being transferred. And right up to 1939, the Jews were going down there. And even in Real Story Never Told, I've got Jews talking down there, saying we had Germans, Jews arriving every week. Now, suddenly, that is upside down to what we were all taught. Now, suddenly, they need an excuse because the world now realizes you were telling us the truth. So they turned it on its head and called him a Zionist. And we kept it quiet because, it's best that people didn't know. And that's it. End of story.
And that's what Ken Livingstone was referring to, wasn't it? When they wanted his head.
Yes.
And they wanted to kick him out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really jumped on him in that, I forget his name, John Mann, that MP. I mean, he was like an attack dog. He was frothing at the mouth.
Or did he just,
He was going absolutely crazy because Ken Livingstone said, well, Hitler helped Zionism. I mean, he helped these Jews to go to Israel. Which is true, and he was accused of anti-Semitism for saying it. And I believe that they admitted that it was true in the court, but they still said it was anti-Semitic for him to say anything about Hitler that wasn't negative, basically. But
well, that's an excuse, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't a question of Hitler helping Zionism. It was a question of Zionism helping Hitler. And he wanted to remove these undesirables, and they wanted to take the undesirables. So what are you going to do?
Exactly. So, well, not only that, the fact is this was all revealed in 1986. Now, when I brought the documentary out in 2012, something like that, can't remember proper, people were stunned. So all this time it's been available, it's been swept under the carpet, because suddenly now in the documentary, people are reeling from this transfer agreement. So what does that tell you?
I think the last time it was mentioned was in the Ernst Sandl trial, wasn't it? Because that was when the book came out. Published in Canada, and there were news reports about it. I mean, you may have used the news report in your documentary where they were talking about it. I mean, it's called the Havarah Agreement. But another part of this is that it wasn't Israel at the time. It was Palestine, and it was controlled by Britain. It was a dependency, a crown dependency on the British Empire. And the condition was that the British Empire would guarantee the peace and guarantee the rights of the Palestinian citizens there. It was never supposed to be a sovereign Jewish state. And it wasn't until after World War II when the Jews began a terrorist campaign against the British, which ended up resulted in them having the whole area for themselves. And they killed lots and lots of British people, lots of British servicemen in really horrific ways that has all been covered up and hidden from history.
St. David Hotel, was it?
Yeah, they blew up the St. David's Hotel. I mean, they garrotted British servicemen with piano wire. They booby-trapped the bodies. And some of these wanted terrorists, I mean, they ended up being in the government. And they ended up being given immunity. I mean, they've come to Britain and they haven't been arrested, even though they've killed all these British servicemen. When they hold the memorial services to the British servicemen, there's no mention of these servicemen that lost their lives in Palestine. It's like they're not allowed to be talked about. They're not allowed to be honoured. It's a dreadful
same with America.
State of affairs.
Same with America with the, when they tried to sink the Liberty.
Liberty, yeah. And, I mean, Hitler did write about it. As you say, Hitler wrote about it in Mein Kampf, what would happen if they did have their own country. And he said it would just be a haven for criminals, which is what it is. And all these oligarchs in Russia that carved up Russia at the end of the Soviet Union and took all the money, they all then escaped to Israel, where they've got immunity. Israel won't extradite any Israeli citizen to any other country in the world. So you end up with Jewish pedophiles running from America to Israel, and they're safe in Israel. You end up with embezzlers and all sorts of criminals are still operating their media empires. I mean, there's one, Kolomoisky. And he's wanted in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And he's the biggest Jewish oligarch there. He's wanted for crimes. And he lives in Israel. And he owns the biggest TV station in Ukraine. But
same in Britain. If you can remember in The Greatest Story Ever Told, Britain, once the Soviet Union were letting the Jews go, Britain brought a law out saying that war crimes were only committed by the Nazis, which meant they were immune from anybody trying to take any of these Bolsheviks to court because the law protected them.
Yeah, I can remember that one. Only Germans can commit war crimes. And wondering why it was that was written in the 90s and why it wasn't something, why it wasn't written at the time of the Nuremberg trial. So that was to cover up for the Russian Jews once the Iron Curtain fell. Right. And we've got another question from Gentile Uprising. He's got some good questions here. He says, the conspiracy theorists always try to link together the Thule Society and Blavatsky's Theosophical Society to National Socialism. Why is that? So we'll have a look at that. And I think we've talked about the Thule Society before. I think we did a podcast where we covered it. But we'll do it again because it seems to come up just about every week. When we check your comments, Dennis, there'll be somebody bringing up the Thule Society.
Yeah.
So we'll have a look at that now. This actually comes from Wikipedia. The Thule Society, originally the Study Group for Germanic Antiquity, was a German occultist and Volkish group founded in Munich right after World War I, named after a mythical northern country in Greek legend. The society is notable chiefly as the organization that sponsored the DAP, the German Workers' Party, which was later reorganized by Adolf Hitler into the National Socialist German Workers' Party. According to Hitler biographer Ian Kershaw, the organization's membership list reads like a who's who of early Nazi sympathizers and leading figures in Munich, including Rudolf Hess, Alfred Rosenberg, Hans Frank, Julius Lehmann, Gottfried Feder, Dietrich Eckart, and Karl Harrer. However, Nicholas Goodrich Clark contends that Hans Frank and Rudolf Hess had been Thule members, but other leading Nazis had only been invited to speak at Thule meetings, or they were entirely unconnected with it. According to Johann Hering, there is no evidence that Hitler ever attended the Thule Society. And I think Nicholas Goodrich Clark, I think he's a pretty good historian. He's pretty accurate. And it seems to me as if it was a bit like something like, say, the London Forum. I mean, the London Forum had lots and lots of different people that spoke there. And if somebody spoke there, it didn't necessarily mean that they agreed with everybody else that spoke there, or that they agreed with everything that the people that were running the London Forum talked about. So just the fact that some of these people went to these meetings didn't mean that they were a part of this Thule Society. And it really seems as if Hitler made use of them rather than they made use of him, as we'll find out later on. And a primary focus of the Thule Society was a claim concerning the origins of the Aryan race. In 1917, people who wanted to join the Germanic order, out of which the Thule Society developed in 1918, had to sign a special blood declaration of faith concerning their lineage. And they had to say, the signer hereby swears to the best of his knowledge and belief that no Jewish or coloured blood flows in either his or in his wife's veins, and that among their ancestors are no members of the coloured races. So it was obviously quite a positive society anyway. It was racially based. They were interested in finding out the history of the Aryan people. But it also had a bit of an occultist bent to it as well. And there were spiritualists that were involved in it, and there was Guido von Liszt. I think he was somebody that they looked up to, and he was just the sort of person that Hitler mocked and ridiculed. You know, these bearded Wotanists wandering around, you know, dancing around trees and talking about worshipping old gods, and you know, he really didn't want National Socialism to be associated with that. Just thought it embarrassing. I mean, you wouldn't want, no political party today would want to be associated with today's pagans when you see
them. Which is why they keep putting the occult on them, because they expect some local lunatic party.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the ones today. I mean, they're absolutely crazy. You see them, you know, they show them at Stonehenge in the middle of summer. They're all out of their heads, you know. I mean, I've been to some of these things, and you got blokes with makeup on, you got mixed race people. It's all just, you know, ultra
it's all hedonism. Isn't it?
Yeah, the total opposite of anything Hitler would be involved in. I've got another bit here. Early in 1920, Karl Harrer, and this was the guy that was the connection between the Thule and the NSDAP, he was forced out of the DAP as Hitler moved to sever the party's link with the Thule Society, which subsequently fell into decline and was dissolved about 5 years later, well before Hitler came to power. And apparently, the membership list, Hitler was using the membership list to get people to become members of the National Socialists. And once he got as much use as he could out of it, he cut them off. It wasn't the Thule Society that was using him. It was the other way around. Rudolf von Sibbetendorf, that was the founder, he had withdrawn from the Thule Society in 1919, but he returned to Germany in 1933 in the hope of reviving it. In that year, he published a book entitled Before Hitler Came, in which he claimed that the Thule Society had paved the way for the Führer. Thulers were the ones to whom Hitler first came, and Thulers were the first to unite themselves with Hitler, he wrote. his claim was not favourably received by the National Socialist authorities. After 1933, esoteric organisations were suppressed, including the Volkisch occultists, or the pagan nationalist types, and many were closed down by anti-Masonic legislation in 1935. Sebottendorf's book itself was prohibited, and he himself was arrested and imprisoned for a short period in 1934, afterwards departing into exile in Turkey. And I would suggest that it was probably that book, his book before Hitler came, that, you know, the secret services and the propaganda people, they would have loved that. And they would have been pushing that in the West, that Hitler was this paganist and this occultist, and he was controlled by Thule. So obviously the National Socialists wanted to get rid of it, and that was obviously not the truth. And then they finish up with...
Yeah, it's comparable.
Go on.
I was just going to say it's comparable to the book, I think it's called Medusa's Head, which states that Crowley met Hitler, but it was actually in his dream in the book, it was fiction. And but people twist all these things and invent quite a good story in the end for people to fall for. But never met Crowley. Only he would have arrested him if he'd met him.
There were quite a few disgruntled people that once had something to do with National Socialism and ended up being kicked out or falling from grace. And a lot of them ended up writing books that were effectively just black propaganda. You know, talking about saying they were all homosexual or they were all communists. The guy whose video we debunked, Christopher John Bjerknes, that's where he gets a lot of his information from, is from these people that were just trying to discredit National Socialism right from the very start. I mean, he claims that Hitler was always a Zionist, Hitler was a Bolshevik, Hitler was a great fan of Jews. Yeah. And this comes from... I think it comes from one of the Strassers, the one that went to Canada, and various other people that fell out with the National Socialists and thought, right, we're going to really stick the knife in here and we're going to write a load of crap about it. And they were encouraged to, obviously, by the OSS
Make friends in that area, yeah.
Yeah, and
CIA.
They published it. And then people get hold of it now and they go, oh, here it is. This is the secret. This is what they're not telling us.
Yeah.
And no, it's not. It's just black propaganda. It's the same as we get propaganda
unchallenged for 70 years, by the way, or more.
Yeah. Well, it would be like somebody in 50 years' time getting hold of what Hope Not Hate say, and then using that as an accurate record of nationalism in the noughties.
Exactly.
It's that sort of thing, basically. And they finish with, they say, nonetheless, it has been argued that some Thule members and their ideas were incorporated into the Third Reich. Now, the swastika was used, so that was used, but I wouldn't say that was incorporated from the Thule Society because that had been around for thousands of years before the Thule Society. They say some of the Thule Society's teachings were expressed in the books of Alfred Rosenberg. Now, remember that this society was all about finding the origins of the Aryan race. And of course, Alfred Rosenberg talks about that a lot. So he would have, and also comparative religions and spirituality. So there would have been some crossover. So again, it's not the Thule Society's teachings that are being expressed in there. It's what they were looking into and what Alfred Rosenberg was researching, just the same thing. Then they say many occult ideas found favor with Heinrich Himmler, who had a great interest in mysticism, unlike Hitler, but the Schutzstaffel under Himmler emulated the structure of Ignatius Loyola's Jesuit order rather than the Thule Society, according to Hone. And I think that's quite telling, because the Thule Society, it was a secret society, it was an occult society, it was probably organized along the same lines as Freemasonry with similar things.
Yeah.
And this is saying the SS weren't like that. The SS followed a Christian order. The Jesuit order.
Holy oath to God.
Yeah, and a Christian structure. And that was even with Himmler, who was interested in mysticism, although, as we know, he left the church, but he didn't leave his respect for Christianity or his respect for Christ. And they say here that Hitler didn't have an interest in mysticism. I would suggest maybe not Eastern mysticism, but he probably was interested in Christian mysticism because he was interested in all those relics. Yeah.
That's right.
And the belief Catholic mysticism. And the belief is that you know, the relics are important things and you know, they have miraculous powers. That's the point.
Well, he had a replica made of the Destiny of Spirit, didn't he? On his desk.
Now, Himmler did.
A Spirit of Destiny. Yeah.
I think he had more than that, didn't he? He had a replica replicas made of all sorts of stuff that they had in the Petersburg Castle. Yeah, a lot of Christian stuff. So that's the Thule Society. So no, they weren't controlling Adolf Hitler and they weren't really anything to do with it. It's just a way of trying to claim that Hitler was part of these secret societies, I think. And the next one is Blavatsky. Now, Blavatsky was the leading theoretician of the Theosophical Society, responsible for establishing its doctrinal basis. The ideas expounded in her published texts provide the basis from which the society and wider theosophical movements emerged. Blavatsky's theosophical ideas were a form of occultism. She subscribed to the anti-Christian current of thought within Western esotericism, which emphasized the idea of an ancient and universal occult science that should be revived. Blavatsky stated that the theosophical teachings were passed on to her by adepts who lived in various parts of the world. So she wanted to form a new religion, a universal religion that everybody could believe in that was based on occult science, which, you know, that's the opposite of what Hitler was doing. So I don't see why he would be interested in that. You know, she did talk about the Aryan race. She had a history of the world, which talked about, I think, about seven different races, and not all human. One of them was completely spirit. One of them was the Lemurians, and another one was the Atlanteans. And then we get to now, and you get the Aryan race. So maybe it's because that they both referred to Aryans. And the symbol that she used has a swastika on it, but it also has an ankh on it, and it has lots of other religious symbols. It really is a New World Order symbol. It's like a syncretism of all the different religions. You know, that coexist thing that we see today.
You symbols. Have just hit the nail on the head.
That's what she was doing.
It represents the New World Order, which is exactly what Germany fought against. And to say that he had a book by his bedside every night, it's just a fallacy. I mean, her teachings are housed, or her books are housed by the Lucis Trust. And the Lucis Trust believe, like the Freemasons, their god is Lucifer. And the angels didn't fall, but they came down, Lucifer came down to help mankind. It's Gnosticism at its best. Which Hitler would have, you know, well, we all know what he thought of Freemasons, and there's no denying when you steamroller every lodge in Europe, he's got a problem with it. Though some might give me an argument. So at the end of the day, when you go down to London, you can go and visit the Lucis Trust, which is just around the corner from Buckingham Palace and Parliament, would never have been around the corner from the Reichstag. Or you can go to New York City, and where they have offices, the Lucis Trust have influential offices in the UN, which again, will never have influential offices in the Reichstag. Trust me.
Oh, she wrote a book called Lucifer. I mean, this is where the UN got the idea from, of this one world religion. It was from her, I think. And I think that's probably why they called it the Lucifer Trust, was in honor of this book.
That's right, it was called the Lucifer Trust, yeah.
Apparently, the society based itself upon the following three objectives. Number one, to form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or colour. Now, that is exactly what they're doing today, isn't it? That's exactly what the project has been for the last...
Exactly.
Well, more than 100 years, because that's got Freemasonry in it as well, the Universal Brotherhood. But that's what they've been trying to do, is break down all the barriers between the races and just put everyone into a brown mass, you know, just like Kubler Galergi. And she's a part of this. And that is, you know, no race, creed, sex, caste, or colour. That's totally against National Socialism, which is all about natural law, hierarchy, race, all of it. And she's trying to get rid of even sex. She's even trying to get rid of the distinction of sex there, which is you've got transgenders now and homosexuality and all the rest of it. And that's their number one objective. And now, number two objective, to encourage the study of comparative religion, philosophy, and science. And comparative religion means that there isn't one true religion. It means that Christianity is the same as witchcraft and Islam, and Hinduism, there is no absolute truth. So that's saying there is no absolute truth, and we can mix all the religions together. And the third one is to investigate the unexplained laws of nature and the powers latent in man. And that's magic. That's Crowley, that is. That's, you know, sex magic and tantra and all the rest of it.
Yeah, there'll be a film as well, aren't there? Hollywood are presently making one about him. That's a surprise, isn't it?
What about Crowley?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really wouldn't surprise me. And then we've got a quote again from historian Nicholas Goodrick Clark. He says, Blavatsky's writings garnered the materials of Neoplatonism, Renaissance magic, Kabbalah, and Freemasonry, together with ancient Egyptian and Greco-Roman mythology and religion, joined by Eastern doctrines taken from Buddhism and Advaita Vedanta, to present the idea of an ancient wisdom handed down from prehistoric times. So it's just a big jumble mess. Yeah, a big jumbled mess. We'll have a bit from here. And then we'll pretend that this is an ancient wisdom that's been handed down for thousands of years. It is exactly what the UN are doing. It's the formation of the religion of the New World Order. So why would Hitler be involved in that? You know, maybe he would study it to know what he was fighting against. I mean,
you'll know your enemy.
And that story about him having that book by his bed, maybe he did for one night, because he used to read one book a night, according to his valet. You know,
he would read a hell of a lot.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I can imagine. Well, he would have a copy of this because, you know, her books, because they were influential, but not so that he could learn from them. So he could learn who he was fighting against.
So other reasons.
No connection to the Thule Society or to Blavatsky. But that's why people link them together, because they're just trying to smear Adolf Hitler and smear National Socialism.
Making it into a joke party, if you like, based on gathering around a table having a seance.
Well, she was a spiritualist, and she was also accused of faking it. The British said, she's faking it.
And that's a Jewish thing as well. Yeah.
Well, she was in India.
The Houdini was another Jew who was into all this.
Well, she may have been a Jew. She was Russian. And British.
Huh?
She went out to India and upset the British people that were running things over there, and they said that she was, you know, she was just a fraud and she was faking all this magical stuff, and then they proved it as well, and then she tried to ignore all that, and then she was talking about these masters and these adepts and this ancient wisdom, and I think that was the same thing that Crowley was doing, because he was saying that he got his wisdom from these ancient angels, gods, and what have you. The same as what she was saying.
Well, she must be funded for her to travel all around the world. She went to Argentina, she went to India. She must have been funded. She must have been.
And she was influenced. And this is the same thing as that other magician that we did a program on. I've momentarily forgotten his name. The guy that was doing the weather magic and the macrobes, John Dee.
John Dee.
Yeah. So you got a link there. John Dee, Blavatsky, Aleister Crowley, all involved in the same thing, and nothing to do.
Yeah, they're all on one side, and you got the Spanish Armada, and you got the Catholic Church, and you've got Hitler and National Socialists on the other side. It's kind of like black and white.
I dare say she will have been against the Catholic Church, but I didn't find. Well, obviously she's anti-Christian, anti-Christian. So of course, the fashionable modern left are going to love her, which they do, and the UN do. Our next comment we've got is from Patrick Ramanowskis. And he says, I was at a museum about Prussia today, and I noticed some cups and little caricatures dating back to the late 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. They said, God with us, in German. They also featured oak leaves. So it would seem to me that the slogan, Gott mit uns, was in existence even during the German Empire, and it isn't just a National Socialist thing. And, yeah, I would have thought it would have been something that the Germans would have said for centuries.
It's 100% correct, yeah.
I mean, it's nice to know that it was always there, but it does seem to be linked with National Socialism now, doesn't it, when you say that?
Well, it does, yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, this is all to do with going back in time with Germany and nationalism, so it's only appropriate that the slogan would carry on because Hitler was, as we said, a Christian.
And he was just carrying on German tradition and Christian church tradition. You know, as we've shown here, it was just Catholic tradition is what he was carrying out by separating the Jews and making them wear separate clothes and all the other laws that he was bringing in that they weren't new. It was just, that was just Catholic church law. Next comment is from Our Man Truth. He says, Himmler is definitely one mysterious soul. I don't think I will ever understand the Third Reich completely. It still makes no sense as to why Hitler appointed Alfred Rosenberg as a minister of culture and heritage if they believed his teachings and thoughts to be so subversive. Thanks, Dennis. And I think, well, the reason why they appointed him, they didn't appoint him because of the book that he wrote. He was appointed before he wrote that book. It's the equivalent of having a minister now in government and they write a book. It's separate to what he was doing in government. And it was his own personal views.
Well, yeah, that's right. Hitler said to the hierarchy of the Catholic Church that wasn't the official stance of National Socialism. That's just his own personal views. And in Germany, you know, these views were tolerated, religions were tolerated, unless it clashed with criticism of the government. So, you know, this is one of the great freedoms of that society, which is also hidden. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's nothing to do with government policy. It's his own personal thoughts. And maybe he got the job simply because Hitler thought he was the best man for the job.
And as you say, he wasn't criticising the government with his book. And that was the most important thing. I mean, and it does show that there was a plurality of views. I mean, there was only about 1-2% of the country that was sympathetic to this, you know, this paganism stuff. Everybody else was Christian or saw themselves as Christian. And even Rosenberg, you know, he wasn't anti-Jesus Christ. He was anti the church.
I mean, that's true, yeah.
I mean, I'll just repeat this because we talked about it a while back. There was those apparent 25 principles or something that Rosenberg had written for the Reich Church, and it was going to be Mein Kampf on the altar and no mention of God and all this nonsense. And that was just a private idea of Alfred Rosenberg's. That wasn't for the Church of the Reich. That wasn't the principles for the Protestant Church, which we've said before, that Hitler wanted to have, like we have in Britain, we have the Church of England. He wanted to have the Church of Germany. He wanted to get all the Protestant denominations together, and it was called the Reich Church. Alfred Rosenberg's 25 principles, which is for the Church of the Reich or something like that, it's slightly different. That was nothing to do with it. But it was presented as if it was to do with that throughout the rest of the world.
Surprise.
Yeah, again, this is... Yeah, they take stuff that was produced back then and they take it out of context and use it to smear them, basically.
Yeah.
But Rosenberg was a very intelligent man, and he was very, very well educated in culture and heritage. So
exactly. You know, great he probably position had the ability to be the main choice.
That was it. You know, he had that ability, so he was given the job. Well, the next one's a bit of a strange one. It's not actually a comment from someone. It's a comment that somebody else said to them. Yeah, it's quite sad, this, really, because it's a German that's...
It's denazification.
...speaking. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like he's been denazified, if the listener can see for themselves there.
Well, let's you know, debunk what they say, and let's remember that, you know, this is how Germans are now, and this is a German nationalist talking to someone called Olivia Dove. And they say, what's funny is I'm a German nationalist who hates the Muslim refugee migration into my country and the current party, except I'm being told about my country from some guy from America who thinks National Socialism had zero flaws. National Socialism did fix the economy, yes, but by stealing all the Jews' money. So that's what they're being taught, is that it was only by stealing all the Jews' money. I mean, where do they get that from?
Well, where did the Jews get it from?
Yeah, where did the Jews get the money from in the first place? That's what's more important, isn't it? Where did they get the money from? Well, I mean, they did fix the economy, but they did away with usury. They did away with the middleman. They did away with the international banking system, and they created their own currency. And then they requisitioned great works like building the Autobahn, building new houses, and they got everybody back to work by doing that and by paying them with these notes that they had actually made themselves instead of getting them from the international banking system. So that was how they did it. It wasn't by stealing the Jews' money. I mean, they told the Jews that they had to hand back things like farms and bits of the national heritage, which they bought at rock bottom prices by crashing the economy. Well, but they paid them the going rate. Didn't they paid them the going rate, didn't they? They didn't, you know, just steal it off them.
Yeah.
They paid them for it. I mean, they made a big thing about that they weren't, you know, that they were going to be paying people for whatever they got. I mean, even artwork and things like that, they paid them for it. They didn't just take it.
Yeah, you get accused of, Nazis. More Nazi stolen art galleries have been discovered in a mountain. I don't believe he stole any of it. I think it were going on, most of it.
Well, yeah, a lot of it they put there to keep it safe because you've got all this fighting going on, or, you know, all these bombs going off. Yeah. So you want to keep the national treasures safe. You want to put them safe out of the way somewhere where they're not going to get blown up. It wasn't a question of, you know, stealing them and hiding them. It was the communists that stole all the money.
Exactly. Yeah. Americans for the patents, 150,000 tons worth of patents.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Again, all this innovation that they made, I mean, the National Socialists were 10 years ahead of every other country in the world. That was how they managed to keep off the rest of the world. You think you got one country in a world war against everybody else, and they managed to hold off for, what, 3 or 4 years? And the reason for that is because they had so much innovation, because they had made so many inventions. You don't make inventions by stealing money. You make inventions by having bright geniuses among your people. That's what helps to fix the economy. You encourage them. You don't say, well, we don't want to encourage the brightest people. Actually, we want to get as many of the lowest intelligent people in our society. We want to get all of them in university. That's what they do now. That's exactly what they do now. They say, we want to have more black people, we want more brown people, we want more black and minority ethnics in university, and we'll turn away the white guys. And that is effectively saying, we want all the people with a low IQ in university, we'll get as many of them in as possible, and the people with a high IQ, we don't want. And National Socialism is the opposite. It's right, we want the brightest people, we'll pay for everything for you if you're bright, because we know that if you're given a good education, you're going to create lots of things for the country. If you educate, you can spend as much money as you want on educating a low IQ person, and they're still not going to be able to do anything at the end of it.
Well, these are perfect excuses why the guy you mentioned who did the documentaries on Hitler saying he was a communist, here is a perfect reason why that is garbage. Because the communists took out the best of that particular country they invaded, be it Poland or wherever, slaughtered them all, right? Where Hitler didn't. Hitler used them and funded them.
He backed
totally different.
Then they say, yes, National Socialism brought back the German spirit, which was good. And I'm sad to see that my country's spirit and history is being entirely censored, though your take on history is completely insane. And the only reason National Socialism fixed the German unemployment rate was because these German workers were working in military factories, which would be closed after World War II ended. So back into poverty, these people would go. And that's the common
thing. You just see them denazification classes as that's been written. Yeah.
But that's a really common one, isn't it? That, they only managed to get back to work because it was all preparing for war. But they weren't prepared for war. I mean, they were still on horseback when they went in on that blitzkrieg. They weren't even ready for war.
Wasn't it when the war started?
Dennis, when the war started, didn't they still had platoons or regiments that were on horseback because they weren't ready for it.
I mean, the truth of it is, like, is it at that particular point, the bankers and especially in America wanted all countries in Europe to be bankrupt and be turned into corporations, and only Germany at that time defied it. So this kind of recession, which was brought on in America, was brought on for that reason. And Roosevelt came in and stole all the gold and everything else. When he called it the banker's holiday or something, when people were withdrawing all the money, he stopped all that and then demanded all the gold to be handed in, or it'd be a big fine. So it was the Jews manipulating the financial control they had over the nations in Europe to force them into bankruptcy, and then bring in legislation which would be positive for the bankers at a later date, which this guy totally misses.
And they were also able to buy everything up at rock-bottom prices then, weren't they? That's why these Jews moved into Germany after World War One. They moved in there and bought everything, bought all these farms, and then got the farmers to come back there and work as labourers for them.
Yeah.
While the Jew could just sit there and cream off the money, and they got rid of all the small shops. And I mean, that's why we have supermarkets today. We don't have any small shops.
Exactly. Covers by the back door, double yellow lines outside every English little shop.
Same mentality. They continue, they say, it's the same thing that slowed down the American economy after the Cold War ended, and especially slowed down the fast-paced growth of the US economy during World War II after it ended. Oh, that had nothing to do with immigration then. I would have thought immigration might have had something to do with that. Slowing down the economy.
Just created a few more wars. Korea, Vietnam.
Yeah, America's constantly been at war. America's constantly been at war since World War II, isn't it? When you think about it.
Yeah, it's finances, isn't it? It's,
dozens of
wars. Money, these people.
So the slowing down of the economy, immigration has been a large part to do with that. They say the only reason...
Well, the war helped America more than anybody, because they put all that into factories and building weapons.
They say the only reason the German economy was able to explode like it did was because they kept stealing the money from other countries they had annexed or conquered. Austrian and Czech gold helped the MEFA bills considerably. Well, that can't be true, though, can it? Because they had national governments in these countries, didn't they? That were quite happy. Well,
Czechoslovakia, something like that, 37. But they've been in power for a number of years, and that's why Austria, for instance, the people in Austria wanted to join the Reich, because it were actually flowing. And Czechoslovakia, they took over Czechoslovakia because no other country could possibly do so, only possibly the Soviet Union, with the bankers' aids. So it was took over the Czechoslovakia because of the financial power Germany had already. So I'm not really going with this one.
Yeah, so these countries wanted to join Germany because Germany was a powerhouse, the powerhouse of Europe.
Yeah.
Everywhere else was going into recession because they had Jews controlling their economy, basically. Germany managed to get
Churchill's mentioned it many times. Churchill said that they were too strong.
I think the Jews said if he would reinstate all the Jews to their positions, then we'll call this boycott and this war off.
Exactly. So he said the Jews didn't start the war.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what he says. That's his final thing that he says. He says, and Jews didn't start World War II, nor did any outsider allied nation. Germany declared war on Poland because they didn't give up Danzig, which had a German minority that was quite large. This will be my last reply because reasoning with a lunatic is impossible and I have to go to work. Well, it's good that they're working. It seems they got a small bit of truth that they tell them in this denazification bit. Like,
well, they have to, haven't they, just to make it believable. Yeah, it's a bit like Alex Jones, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like here, Germany declared war on Poland because they wouldn't give up Danzig, which had a German minority. Well, no, it was the Germans in Danzig were being tortured and murdered.
Persecuted.
And kicked out and not allowed to speak their own language because Poland had been given a blank check to do whatever they liked by Britain.
Well, if France took over Lancashire, for instance, and declared the port of Liverpool French, and then built another port a couple of miles up the road, and that was being used instead of Liverpool, Liverpool would soon be wrecked, which is exactly what Danzig was being done. And Hitler saw this, and come on, there's 98% German in there. This is still a German city. It's got German heritage. Anything to do against Danzig is a crime against Germany. Was he wrong? No, of course not.
Oh, he did all he could to actually avoid that as well, didn't he? I mean, it was right at the 11th hour. I mean, the Poles were supposed to come along to talks with Germany to avoid anything like this happening. And the Germans waited. And they waited.
Yeah.
And they waited. And the Polish delegation didn't turn up. 24 hours later, Hitler went in. Which,
well, 6 months later, really.
Six months since it started. And they did everything they could to prevent what did happen from happening. And you can read in the White Book, and they were expecting Britain to come along and guarantee Poland, and they were expecting Britain to make sure that Poland turned up for these important negotiations. But unbeknownst to them, Britain had said to Poland, if you can get Germany into a war, don't worry about it, we'll back you. And Poland thought
Roosevelt.
Poland thought that Berlin was going to be a part of Poland.
Of course it is.
They even had maps with that written on. That was the real reason for it. And the Jews were the first to actually declare war. Judea declares war on Germany was the Daily Express headline from, what was it, 1936? Correct. Or 1933. 1933, the Jews declared war officially. So,
we never started it.
Them and Britain, really, because it was Churchill that declared war once Germany had got into Poland to liberate the Germans that were in
it. And Roosevelt were behind him, pushing him.
And who was behind Roosevelt?
So that goes back to Jews again,
huh? Yeah. And Roosevelt's Jewish, apparently, as well.
Yeah,
we got a final comment here from Luke M. He says, personally, I think our true lineage goes back even further with Noah and his son Japheth. I think Japheth went north and populated the northern tribes. Ham went south and populated Egypt, creating Egyptians, and Shem went to Israel. But we are all sons and daughters of Noah. And we are all white people are the sons and daughters of Noah. It couldn't be anything else. I mean, you couldn't have three brothers, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. I mean, one of them couldn't be black. They all have to be white. They all have to look like one another because Noah was pure in his generation. So Noah was obviously a pure white man. Obviously, his wife was, and his three sons were. So whether you think you're descended from Japheth or Shem, you're still white. Ham, who went off to populate Egypt, they were the ones that interbred with the non-whites. And that's where you get your Ethiopians from. That's where you get your Canaanites from, your Arabs, Cush, Babylonia, Babylon. All of that lot comes from Ham. Japheth, he went into the coastlands of Europe. He was the first one to colonize the coastlands of Europe. And then the descendants of Shem followed Japheth into Europe, and Japheth became a part of Shem, which is one of the prophecies in the Old Testament that Japheth will live in the tents of Shem. And I've done whole programs on this with William Fink in the Bible Basics series. So if anyone's interested in that, I mean, we go into just so much depth in the history of the white race that you can find out from the Bible. I think it's, I definitely recommend people go and check that out to find out more about that. But yeah, Noah was white. Yeah, so obviously
I didn't see that film, actually. Which film was that? It came out a couple years ago, didn't it, Noah?
Oh, I haven't seen that.
I've only seen that, the Hollywood version.
No, I haven't seen that. They probably make him out to be a Jew. They probably make him out to be a Jew, Dennis. I certainly don't want to see that.
Yeah. All right. Really black.
All right, that brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you all have a great weekend ahead of you.
Tuned in to Radio.